not wanting to fight.
So we'll finish off this, that discussion, and cover the last two more thoroughly in this section, last section of the first chapter. So what was the first?
Compassion.
Huh?
Compassion.
And that's also brought out in this section too, actually. It's second item was what?
Happy.
He wasn't going to be happy. This is a little bit selfish. This one. This is more devotional. If you like. Three. What was the third one? This is another very important point. And that's also mentioned here in text 37 and 38. Ojanan, although these men, their hearts overtaken by greed, see no fault in killing one's family or quarrelling with friends, why should we, to concede the crime in destroying a family, engage in these acts of sin? Duryodhana and his friends may not be able to see the simple reactions that will befall those who act improperly or the consequences of their activities, but we can. So therefore, there's good reason not to fight. And Prabhupada mentions in the purport here, it's a good reason for good support for Arjuna's argument. Obligation is actually binding when the effect is good. But when the effect is otherwise, then no one can be bound. So, you know, he's a Kshatriya. Kshatriyas by nature are chivalrous. And according to the Kshatriya code, if you're challenged by another Kshatriya to fight, then you should fight. But if you can see that the result is not going to be good, then you're not obliged to. Right? And Arjuna is prefacing actually this next point here, destruction of dynasty. How do we describe it on Thursday? Like that?
Yep.
Destruction of dynasty, or destruction of family tradition, shall we say. Family traditions. And this next section really concentrates on this point about family tradition and why it is very important to maintain the family tradition. Something that we see within the Indian culture, even to this day, the family tradition is such a binding force that keeps society together. You know, your family is your insurance policy. Forget superannuation, pension, unemployment benefits or anything like that, where you get in Australia very easily. But in India, what are the unemployment benefits?
Your offspring.
Your offspring, yes, possibly. Possibly, yes. And you know, in India, you drive in any street in any major city, or actually maybe not every major city, but many of them, major streets, and you'll find beggars. The only place where I've not seen very many beggars in India is in Pune. That means they must be very wealthy there. They don't have beggars. Maharashtra seems to be a very well-off state. Although go to Mumbai and it's a completely different story. So family tradition is very important, and that will be brought out. And then the final, which is really sort of illustrated in the last couple of verses of this section, indecision. as a result of all these things, he's just indecisive. And so he just, you know, sort of just collapses on the chariot and says, oh, that's it, I've finished. More or less. So, 37 and 38. Arjuna considered that the other party might be blind to the effects of the results of their fighting. But he wasn't. And so therefore, he's considering, is this worth it? Is it worth it to fight looking at all the consequences that are going to come as a result of the fighting? Text 39, with the destruction of dynasty, the eternal family tradition is vanquished, and thus the rest of the family becomes involved in irreligion. So then we have a very in-depth analysis of what happens when the leaders of society are destroyed and are no longer then able to fulfill their responsibilities. What happens? Is something that, and it's a good argument actually. It's a very strong argument in many respects as to why he shouldn't fight, because it would lead to the most of the leaders of society at that time would be killed. So next verse. An interesting purport. And actually, in this purport, there is a statement by Srila Prabhupada which is quite challenging for a lot of people. In fact, there are people who have opened up the Bhagavad Gita, read this purport, and then would never touch the book again. I don't know if you've noticed it or not. Which requires a little bit of analysis. We should look at it, perhaps, and work out what's actually going on here. When irreligion is prominent in the family, O Krishna, the women of the family become polluted, and from the degradation of womanhood, our descendant of Vishnu comes unwanted progeny. So, the leaders of society are no longer able to perform their function. So then what happens? It means that religious principles are no longer guarded. This is Arjuna's point. Religious principles are not being guarded by the leaders of society. Irreligion will then become prominent. And as a result of that, unqualified and unchaste men will exploit the situation and take advantage of the women. And, you know, there are examples of that. If you look at today's society, then you can see this is graphically revealed, you know. In order to sell anything, basically, the form of a woman will be used. Even if it's a, you know, it'll be a brake pad for a motor car, for the brakes of a motor car. So what do? We have a naked woman to sell it. Or, you know, something equally sort of unsexy. But to sex it up, then we'll put in a form of a woman. So it's what he says here is correct, actually. Men will, unprincipled men will exploit women. Is that right? So therefore, it's the position of the seniors within society to avoid this. What are the consequences? The women of the family become polluted, and from the degradation of womanhood comes unwanted progeny. And then with unwanted progeny, then what do we get? A lot of trouble.
I'd like to interpret this way. Would be the decline of religion. Men become unprincipled. Women get exploited. You know, women get exploited. It's not that Some unprincipled men, I think, men, as a class, the category fall in God.
Just the all men?
In general. And we see today.
Yes. Prabhupada mentions here, good population in human society is the basic principle for peace. And if you have a peaceful society, then you have a situation where people can practice spiritual life and make some spiritual advancement. When people are following religious principles and there's Vana Shankara or, you know, disturbed people, then it's very hard for there to be a peaceful situation, and so consequently then, you know, because of the disturbance, it's hard to make any progress in spiritual life. I living in Melbourne in, 2006, and look around you. How easy is it to be disturbed by things? So easy.
Yeah. Prostitution was there even in Krishna's time and before that.
Yeah.
How was that explained?
How was it explained?
When you say that there was religion there, there was principles there. Why was prostitution there?
Why was it?
It was prevalent, right?
Because so, there were unprincipled men even then.
But there were kings and all who were principled, whose duty was it to see that there is. Even during Krishna's time, if you have prostitution, then what can you expect in Kali Yuga?
Because the men were more principled, I guess you had a higher level of religiosity. At the moment you have practically no religiosity, or certainly if there is religion, it's simply a masquerade or a show of religious principles. So the spectrum there was a broader spectrum of religious to irreligious behaviour. Now we just have all irreligious behaviour.
But it is mind-boggling to even think that there was even prostitution at that time.
Well, I don't know, why is it mind-boggling?
Lord Krishna is there, and at that time that's going on.
Take into consideration it's not Satya-yuga, it's Dwapara-yuga. And so already there's a decline in principles, in religious principles. Already there's been a decline of a significant degree. And it's just prior to Kali Yuga. So it's a mix of...
And then Treta Yuga also.
Yeah, so...
Only in Satya Yuga it's not there, is it? Or was it there in Satya Yuga?
Prabhupada even mentions, in the reign of Maharaj Pariksit that he kept these sinful activities out. So, it seems that there was some element of non-devotional principles. We see it. There were the demons, look at Hiranyakashipu it's an element that exists within society to a greater or a lesser degree. Right? It exists. So it's not strange to think, oh, look, there are prostitutes. I would suggest anyway. Right? And so this tendency towards sense gratification, right, has been current for a very, very long time. But this is my angle, I would suggest, one way to look at it, right? That religious principles in at the end of Dwapara Yuga were manifest in a greater degree. There were sages and saintly persons like Vyasadeva and at the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, when the Bhagavatam was spoken, and Asita, Devala, all these different rishis, Narada Muni even came, there were so many exalted personalities, so the principles of religion were not eclipsed by the simple activity. Whereas in the Kali Yuga, the religious activities are very much eclipsed by the simple activities. In other words, the simple activities are much more prominent and considered normal. Right? So, You know, prostitution was acceptable so long as it was, you know, or kept in a discreet location. Even now, I mean, you know, that's what we do. We keep it in St Kilda.
No, it's better tasteful.
Yeah, or it's on the classified pages of your local newspaper. Ring this number, call this person,
Can the term unchaste be applied to men?
We'll come to that later. We'll give you... Yeah, of course, obviously. Chastity is a shared principle. It's not only women who are unchaste.
The men tends to be used to contemplate women's chastity, women's unchaste.
I'm not sure about that. There are plenty of men who are unchaste.
Yes, I do agree with that. But the word chaste is not used in relation to men. It tends to be used in relation to women.
We'll have a look at it a little bit later on. That's one of the questions we'll be exploring. Prabhupada says, such copulation depends on the chastity and faithfulness of its womanhood. As children are very prone to be misled, women are similarly very prone to degradation. Therefore, both children and women require protection by the elder members of the family. By being engaged in various religious practices, women will not be misled into adultery. Now, obviously by unscrupulous men. They screw the tango. But here's the statement that really gets under people's skin. According to Chanakya Pandit, women are generally not very intelligent and therefore not trustworthy. I've heard of people who have read this, but actually there's been debates even, not recently, but a few years ago, we should remove this statement from the Bhagavad Gita. Because Prabhupada is not stating it, he's saying Chanakya Pandit said it. So he's quoting this as an example. So the different family traditions of religious activity should always engage them, and thus their chastity and devotion will give birth to a good population eligible for participating in the Varnashram system. But, you know, it does hinge on this, on the principle also, that the men have to be chaste. Yeah. But otherwise, if there's a failure of the system, then it all breaks down, and then you get the situation like we've got today. It would be simplistic to blame it all on the women. Right?
The way I like to interpret this, and sorry, and because I've had a lot of problems with this, and
with men.
And this is our idea.
Okay.
That with the decline of religion, there's a rise in unchastity, if you want to call it, across the board. Men and women are not intrinsically, more prone to immorality than men are. But because they're more vulnerable, as children are vulnerable, all that discourse is left up to this game is made to the fact that there's something wrong with them, morality and intellect. And that's not the case. I remember attending a lecture from Priyad Malanga where he covered this point beautifully. And by the end of it all, he's pretty convinced of the complicity of both men and women in women's and children's undermining. But this is bad formulation because it gives the impression about women's integrity being less than men. And that is not the case. Women are transmitters of culture, but the culture generally declines.
Everybody is degraded. Everybody is degraded.
Yeah. So they get the blame in the section which is
unfair. I think the way I'm looking at it is what they are probably trying to convey, as far as I see, that women are not intelligent enough to see through manipulative situations because of their naturally compassionate nature. They don't really look for that, so they don't see it. So that's what I'm thinking. Maybe they're not intelligent in that perspective to look and find that, so therefore they get more vulnerable.
Yeah, there's plenty of women who are happy to be exploited by men because they have the size of wake up. Right? I mean, seriously, that's, I think, you know, that's a good point.
So that's also because of they are being forced to earn. But men are exploited by men. Women
yes, they're stupid too.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, this is a hot topic. We will move on. You know, I don't walk around. I don't walk around thinking you stupid women. Get out of the way. Because I see also, as you say, plenty of stupid men doing stupid things too. But what we have to look for, what I would suggest is we have to look for the occasions where this is correct. Otherwise Prabhupada wouldn't make this statement. Really, you know, the Shastra is not biased towards anybody. It is simply stating facts. We have to look at, I believe, my way of looking at it is look at where it is correct. Look at the circumstances where it is. There are plenty of other situations where we can understand that it can be applied across the board, but in this particular situation there must be, or there is, circumstances where these statements are supported by evidence. Right?
So if I just can add one statement. I agree with Mandali that women are basically compassionate and emotional. That emotion part of it, when you're emotional you can't be intellect. It happens to anybody. And women are more prone to be emotional than men.
Yes, and
that
you
is
know,
what
I would suggest,
is clouding the intellect.
Yes, and I would suggest that that's part, that's, you know, the male psychology works in a particular way. Even the chemistry works differently. Right? It's proven, demonstrable. And the female psychology and chemistry works in another way. And now they have two functions. In a traditional society, especially in an agrarian-based society, where the women's role is more of a nurturing, caring, supportive, if you like, and the male is one of you know, being the breadwinner, the protector, the earner, the champion of the family, if you like. Right? And so for those purposes, those qualities are actually desirable. They're good, not bad. They come with the. But now, you know, we're in Kali Yuga. Everything is topsy turvy. We've got the women competing in the marketplace with the men. Now the men are pushing the prams around Albert Park. You know, when I was a kid, you didn't, you know, if you were a bloke, you didn't push a pram. Right? And nowadays, the blokes push the prams and the wife's off got a job. So it's all upside down.
Not as relevant in Kali Yuga because it says that women are less intelligent but also
shudras,
and these things must
mean not shudras. That's right, or less. That, I think you'd be glorifying them to call them shudras. So, you know, yes, we have to look at things. Now, does this apply, we'll discuss this a little bit later on, but does this apply to the women in Krishna consciousness? I didn't bring it with me. But Prabhupada says no. This is a description of materialistic people, not of devotees. Right? Prabhupada didn't see his women disciples as less intelligent at all. Because he would say, when they would complain about this sort of thing, he'd say, hey, you're the body, you're a woman, you're not, you're a spirit soul. So the spirit soul is free from these designations, engaged in Krishna's service, we're actually free from these designations. So there's a transcendental point of view, and then there's a more conditioned sort of set of constraints. Yeah. On the failure of such varnashram dharma, naturally the women become free to act and mix with men, and thus adultery is indulged in at the risk of unwanted population. Irresponsible men, right? Prabhupada says, irresponsible men also provoke adultery in society. Okay, text 41. An increase of unwanted population certainly causes hellish life, both for the family and for those who destroy the family tradition. The ancestors of such corrupt families fall down because the performances for offering them food and water are entirely stopped. Now here's a very interesting point. Not only do the current population fall down, but opportunities for those who have left, they're also not given a chance to be liberated because the pinda is not offered to them. Of course, for the devotees, this is not necessary, actually. We don't have to, the Shraddha ceremony for the devotees is not recommended or even required, actually. There's a quotation here, Devashi Bhutakta Ninam Pritrinam Nakinkara Mayam Rinicharajam Savatmana Yasaranam Saranyam Gato Mukundam Parajvitya Kartam. Anyone who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, the giver of liberation, giving up all kinds of obligation and has taken to the path in all seriousness, owes neither duties nor obligations to the demigods, sages, general living entities, family members, humankind or forefathers. Now that doesn't mean that the men can now neglect their wives, mind you, or that the wives no longer have any responsibility to look after their families or their husbands. Right? But one is freed from obligation when one is engaged in the service of Krishna. Material obligation. Right? Material obligations. But that doesn't mean one's free from one's spiritual obligations. Right? And so therefore, even within the spiritual obligations, actually it appears there's a subset of material obligations. So that means, you know, a Krishna conscious man still has to look after his family, and a Krishna conscious mother also has to look after the family, for example. Not that we can pick and choose, oh yes, I like this, but I don't like that, therefore I can renounce it because I'm a servant of Krishna. And it says here that I don't have any obligations to anybody.
So is this at the Uttamadhikari level? Because
it's
saying the person who has...
Sannyasi, maybe. Uttamadhikari, yes.
Or Madhyamadhikari, not below that. Because we are all still obliged to do all that because we are not at that level.
Mm.
That's how I understand it.
Let me think about it. Uttamadhikari. See, even a Kanishtha Adhikari, if they're surrendered to Krishna, right, but the family says, no, you shouldn't do it. If you join the temple, they'll take all of your money away, you know, they'll restrict you from seeing your family, they'll make you work for them, they'll keep you under control, right? Don't join the temple. He's only a Krishna character, right? What does he have to do? Is he obliged to follow the family and say, yes, alright, okay, you're right, I won't join the temple.
At the Kanchanagari, maybe he has to convince, or at the Kanchanagari, maybe he may accept, because he is still a neophyte.
But he may also have enough faith and attraction to Krishna to say, no, the temple president told me it's okay to join the temple.
Yeah. Then he's no longer Kanishtha Prabhu.
He's not a Kanishtha.
No longer Kanishtha. He has
firm enough faith. But he could be Kanishtha because 2 years later he could decide, actually, no, mum and dad were right, I'm going back to the family. Right? So, firm faith or not so strong faith, if they surrender somehow or another by the association of devotees to Krishna, then they're not obliged to follow the more mundane rules and regulations. So see, the interesting thing is, in many devotees' situations, they neglect, they ignore, if you like, and isolate themselves from the family influence, right? When they first become devotees. For good reason. Because they're a bad association. But as a person's faith becomes stronger and more secure in Krishna consciousness, then they re-establish the relationships with their family. But what for? Not because they want to necessarily, you know, associate with their family, but because they have compassion for their family and they want to help them make advancement also in Krishna consciousness. Right?
Yep.
So very often we may neglect our families because we know they're just going to influence us in a way that's going to be detrimental for our Krishna consciousness. But now I'm stronger in my Krishna consciousness, I can now associate with them, they have a natural affection for me because I'm their child or their relation, and so therefore now I can help them also come to Krishna consciousness, because now I'm stronger and their influence is going to be less on me. Huh? So I would suggest Kanishta, Majjan, Uttam, doesn't matter, Mahabhagavat or little devotee, if he tries to surrender to Krishna, then actually this is valid for everybody. You're not obliged to follow the rules and regulations of society. You follow what's good for your Krishna consciousness. Right? That's a higher principle. Because the parents will say, no, you don't need to take this spiritual life. When you get older, it's when you get older, that's when you take the spiritual life. Now you have to concentrate on looking after your family. Is that right?
Yeah.
So what do? Convert your family into devotees too. Although that may be a long-term project. But I've seen over the years how my parents and my family have become slowly, gradually more and more amenable to Krishna consciousness. It takes time. But it works. If you stick to your principles. Then I mentioned a couple of devotees. A friend that my wife and I went to school with, you know, 20, how many years ago? More than 20, probably 35 years ago. Long time ago. She came to visit us, came to Melbourne a few weeks ago, and then she's just written back to us and she's inquiring about Krishna consciousness. What are you doing? What is it? She was saying, your beautiful lifestyles. You know, lived in a Hare Krishna temple. I wonder how beautiful it is. But you know, people become attracted. Actually, it is beautiful. Because it's service to Krishna. It's all attractive, basically. So, yeah, we're not obliged, but then in Krishna consciousness, that doesn't mean, you know, just blithely giving up everything. Although in the past, in an immature state of consciousness, sometimes we've seen that. But actually, in Krishna consciousness, we have a heightened sense of responsibility to our family, but it's on the spiritual level. Right? By the evil deeds, text 42, by the evil deeds of those who destroy the family tradition and thus give rise to unwanted children, all kinds of community projects and family welfare activities are devastated. So when there's no religiosity within society, there's no concern for the family tradition, there's no concern for the exploitation of women and children, and there's no consideration of our forefathers, so there's no performance of sacrifice to benefit them. So society becomes very degraded. The Varnashram system ceases to exist. Sanatana Dharma, or religious principles, are not followed anymore. And so we get the current situation where people are just focused on money, and you know, the more sense gratification that you can indulge in, then the better person you are. Right? I've seen it, it struck me actually, within American society today, especially within American media, there's a focus on sense gratification as being the ultimate goal. This computer that I just got set up here is stuck on MSN.com, which I hate, to be honest. But it's interesting, I've been looking at the headlines on there, you know, Babes of the World Cup. This is on the front page of the paper. Babes of the World Cup? What's that got to do with anything civilised? Then there was another one, Blades of the World Cup, this morning when it came out, I can't remember what it was. It only happens when I start my computer. The way they set up a new computer, it opens up on nsn.com. You should be able to go on Internet Explorer and say, okay, make my homepage iscon.net.au, right, which I've done. But every time my computer starts, it goes back to msn.com. So it's got a bug, set up bug in it, I've got to get rid of. But there was another thing that I noticed also, and I've forgotten what it was. Oh yeah, why this particular movie star is a hot magnet for women. Right? The propane. Now you don't find that in a respectable newspaper, right, like The Age. Well, it's arguable as to whether The Age is a respectable newspaper, but certainly, you know, in more reputable publications, you don't find that kind of a thing. Right? But this is, you know, this is MSN.com, is a fairly, would be considered a fairly reputable organisation. But this is the kind of thing that it promotes within society. Why is this fellow, you know, attractive to women? Why is he so successful with women? This is what society is focused on. By the leaders, people who manage the media and so forth, is what they channel people's attention towards their gratification. Unfortunate. There are many examples. Here. Therefore, the breaking of the Sanatana Dharma tradition by irresponsible leaders, mostly men, right? Irresponsible men of society, brings about chaos in that society, and consequently people forget the aim of life. Right? People forget the aim of life. Vishnu. Such leaders are called blind, and persons who follow such men are sure to be led into chaos. All right? Text 43. O Krishna, maintainer of the people, I have heard by the city succession that those who destroy family traditions dwell always in hell. So destruction of family tradition degrades society, but also it's sinful. So it comes back to this combination of these reasons that Arjuna is using here. And not only that, it's interesting, Arjuna is not only speaking from experiences I have seen, but he says it's also stated within the Shastra. So he's not just creating his own argument here. This is, Prabhupada says, in spiritual circles one should quote from Shastra if we're speaking. We should refer to evidence. Of course, the strongest evidence is that which is recommended within the Shastra. And so he says, I have heard, by disciplic succession, same thing, or the part of that system. Text 44, alas, how strange it is that we are preparing to commit greatly sinful acts. Driven by the desire to enjoy royal happiness, we are intent on killing our own kinsmen. And so he's saying that also to Krishna. He's saying, you and I, not just me, but you. You want us to fight, and we'll be responsible for all of these things. This is incredibly bad. Right? Arguments are good arguments, actually, although not accepted by Krishna later on. But they are good, they're strong arguments.
Can I ask you something related that bothers me? And I know answers have been given in the past about the role of Yogamaya in Jona and Jonacharya and Bhishma's
decision to, in many senses, not defend, protect, and to engage in the battle.
Yes.
How do we explain it?
Yes.
Vishnu and Drona were friendly, as were the Pandavas, right, with Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. And they, by that association, they actually were somehow somewhat contaminated by that. Just like, you know, one is inclined to do things that one might not ordinarily do by bad association. You know, I remember when I was working at the zoo, I used to get paid every night. And it was hard to save money if you... Actually, it was hard for me to save money at any time, but it made it especially hard. The reason why they did that, because we used to work with a lot of alcoholics. And so, you know, they'd have to be paid every night to keep alive, basically, the old heroes. So, I made, usually every week I'd make a vow, okay, this week I won't spend my money, I'll just keep saving up. You know, inevitably my mates would come around, ouch. My mates would come around on a Wednesday night, they'd say, hey, how's it going, let's go down the pub. No, I'm not going down the pub. Ah, come on, what's wrong with you? So eventually, you know, by their association, they would convince me to go down the pub, even though I decided earlier in the week that I wouldn't do it. So, you know, you are who you associate with. So in this particular case, they had associated with Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra and the other Shakuni and others who were evil-minded. And so that rubbed off on them a little bit. Right? So even Bhishmadev, who's considered to be a Mahajan, right? He's a Mahajan, he was influenced by that. And yet, when Krishna wanted Yudhisthira to be free from his doubt as to the cause of the battle of Kurukshetra, right? Then he took him to Bhishmadev and then Bhishma cleared his doubts. So, you know, Abhichet Sudaracharo Vajate Mamananyabak. For a devotee, there may appear to be some discrepancy in their behaviour, but because they're fully a servant of Krishna, that is sublimated by their activities in devotional service. That doesn't mean that devotees can do simple things and think, yes, now I'm still a devotee. But, you know, by circumstance or by situation, sometimes there may be some difficulty or some apparent retrograde steps. But because they're on a path of devotional service, it is considered to be the path of perfection, so there will be ultimate success.
So as I understand this, Bhishmadev, he had taken a vow to protect the throne at any cost. That's right. And so he was bound by that. He was bound by his principle, his vow. And later on in the battlefield, he says, my mistake was that I was giving more importance to my vow rather than to the religion. That is my mistake. Yudhishthira also made the same mistake, if you like. And in fact, sticking to his vow of not telling a lie, for example.
The thing is that Mahabharata and all of these situations are very complex. It's not a simple thing. There are so many themes and sub-themes and so forth going on. The relationships are so, what's the word, so deep and intricate. So many reasons why.
And actually later on when he did advise Yudhishthira, he says, now I have bread, so all that I have paid the price.
Since
all my bread has gone, all the anandas has gone, and now I can advise you, because in fact he says that.
Okay, there you go. I've not read that, but...
In fact there's another analogy also where somebody else was bred and then after they that, when Krishna danced on Kaliya,
right.
It spits out all the blood and initially the wife of Kaliya, they say that he should be killed.
Yeah.
He's not listening to us. Then after when Krishna danced on Kaliya and all the poison, the blood and everything comes out, they say that now he is
purified.
He's purified, so please forgive him. So similarly, the same thing.
This is why they say you should let blood. Get rid of the bad blood in the person. Okay. Interesting point. I've not heard that before, but it's worth consideration. Okay, so Text 44, Arjuna's not, he's showing his devotional qualification here. He's not inclined to pursue the kingdom just because he wants it. And of course, Krishna's not pursuing the kingdom because he wants it either. So therefore, you know, even though it's interesting, Arjuna's saying, I don't want to pursue it for selfish reasons, but Krishna's also saying, ultimately, neither do I. Right? Although Arjuna's trying to implicate him and saying, look, you know, we're trying to do this for selfish reasons. We just want to install ourselves on the throne. But Krishna's plan is far deeper than that. Yes, he does want to install the Pandavas on the throne, but not for selfish reasons, or if they are selfish reasons, because there is a certain amount of selfishness in Krishna consciousness, but it is from the spiritual platform, not from the false ego platform. It's not from the materialistic platform. So for the devotee to have ego, it's not a bad thing, unless it's false ego, ahankara. So he's against, Arjuna's against the ahankara, the false conception of I will be the king. Whereas the proper conception of being the king is, I am the king acting under Krishna's orders. I represent the authority of the Lord. That's actually the proper mentality of a devotee. So Arjuna is showing his concern as a devotee. I don't want to engage in these activities just for materialistic reasons. Better for me, now he's a Kshatriya, and yet he's saying, better they kill me, and I don't resist. Better for me if the sons of Dhritarashtra, weapons in hand, were to kill me unarmed and unresisting on the battlefield. Because I'll be performing so many simple activities, I'll be responsible for destroying the family. It's not good for me. Better they kill me. Otherwise, you know, what am I going to do? Go and be a beggar. And of course, Prabhupada says, Arjuna as a Kshatriya can't go off and be a beggar because it's not his nature. He's a Kshatriya. He'll have to act as a Kshatriya, not as a Brahmana. And Prabhupada says here at the end, all these symptoms are due to the soft-heartedness resulting from his being a great devotee. Text 46. Sanjaya said, this must be the last verse. It is. Arjuna, having thus spoken on the battlefield, cast aside his bow and arrows and sat down on the chariot. His mind overwhelmed with grief. Prabhupada said, you can imagine that he's crying. Because what does Krishna say to that? There you cry, baby. You want everybody to call you a crybaby? Big Kshatriya? He was so afflicted with lamentation that he sat down and dropped his bow and arrows. That's amazing. Such a kind and soft-hearted person in the devotional service of the Lord is fit to receive self-knowledge. So, it is from this point that Krishna says, "Anarya, you know, where has this lamentation come from?" Because lamentation is actually not. Proper, if you like, or appropriate for a devotee. Certainly not for a Kshatriya like Arjuna. So Krishna's focuses in on this lamentation of Arjuna. But he's lamenting because he's confused by all of these different options that he sees, or all of these different causes or reasons for not fighting, basically. And because he is such a great devotee, he's bewildered, basically. All right, does anyone have any comments or questions on any of these points? Yes.
Prabhu, Often in the first chapter, Prabhupada actually quotes Chanakya Pandit. I know that Chanakya Pandit was a great...
Prabhupada quotes Chanakya Pandit a lot. In many places in Bhagavatam also. Yes.
So was he a great devotee, Chanakya Pandit?
Not really, no. He was a... I think what they call Niti Shastra, which is sort of like Dharma Shastra, not Dharma Shastra, Niti Shastra, which means moral codes, moral principles, you know, a bit like Lao, what is that Chinese fellow? Lao Tzu, is it, or something? They quote him on how to win fights, battles. So Chanakya's got lots of things about how to defeat your enemies and how to deal with superiors and inferiors, and he was a Brahmana, but he was wasn't he advisor to Chandragupta or something?
Yeah,
like that's described. So moral codes and moral and what's the other word? Sort of like practical information about how to manage your life.
That same passage where states that women are not very intelligent, not to be trusted. Although if it is true in some extent, or it's meant to be true in some extent, but it's offensive if taken literally, would it be possible to rephrase it in that way that it is exactly true? Or, I only say that it's so early on in the Gita. Anybody inquisitive about Krishna consciousness who reads that with today's schooling will reject the whole philosophy out of hand as being chauvinistic and backwards. It taken literally, it's unacceptable to Western mind.
That's a comment. That's the comment that people make. Didn't stop any of us. I don't think we're illogical or unsophisticated or ill-educated.
What was the defence for leaving it in there as it is?
That's how Prabhupada wrote the book. You don't. And just as we've got Bhagavad Gita as it is, presenting what Krishna says, we shouldn't remove what Prabhupada says, simply because we find it offensive to our mentality.
I wouldn't say remove it, only if the original translation has some different, slightly different import. He's only quoting that it's a second, it's a, he's quoting Shastra himself, maybe there was...
Well,
I don't
know. Anyway, the BBT decided not to change the Bhagavad Gita, so we stuck with the fact that...
Prabhuji, in teachings of Kyun Kunti, Kunti and Russell says that women are generally less intelligent compared to men.
Yeah, look, let's not go. We will venture into this realm of exploration, but in a minute. Somebody else had a question. Oh, Fruity.
What would they say or criticise that of what Ajahn was predicting about society falling apart?
Yes.
Leaders and so. Is that what actually happened? Is that why what sort of started Kali Yuga?
Well, yes and no, but yes. But it wasn't as a result of... The reality was that the Pandavas were enthroned and then Maharaj preached it. And so there were saintly kings, actually, who came after. But in one sense... You're correct. This was the end, you know, it was the cusp of the joining between the Dwapara Yuga and the Kali Yuga. Right? So definitely there were, and that's Krishna's plan also, in the greater scheme of things, right? So, blame it on Krishna. But devotees won't even do that. Right? Because ultimately, why are we in the material world? We're in the material world because we wanted to be here, not because Krishna wanted us to be here. But, you know, in the production, if you like, the show of the material world, it has a sequence of events, and there are many things that take place in that. And, of course, part of that is, after Krishna's departure, then that heralds the beginning of Kali Yuga. So many things going on. And combined together, they show a general trend towards that beginning of Kali Yuga. I don't think we can blame it on, you know, anybody necessarily, but that's the way it goes. And Arjuna, in that sense, is predicting what will happen in the future. Yeah. So perhaps he is. Prabhupada doesn't mention it. I've not read anything of that the Acharyas have suggested in that regard, but that's how I look at it.
Just to add to this discussion, while looking through that word, that Varna Shankara, you know, trying to understand it, how I looked at it was very similar. It's sort of saying his foreboding shaking of the equilibrium, so to speak, by saying, I start this war because you're forcing me to do it, and it sets in motion a self-perpetuating cycle which leads to war because so many other things will happen, and he mentions war and pestilence will result, and there another cycle starts because of another war. So it's sort of like saying it is a, once you start this, it's going to be never-ending cycle which is going to lead to war, and everything, the whole cycle repeats itself, and it's born again and again, you can't stop it, sort of thing. So I think, like, you know, he's really questioning that, do you want me to stop that?
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
And Krishna does want him to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to have a little exercise here to test our how many groups are we going to have? One, two, three. Actually, we've got five groups, and I've only got four questions here. I'll have to make up another question. Okay, we'll give this to the
one group and one time.
All right, yeah, actually that'll be good. First question, I wonder if we should give this to the women or the men. I've got some. Okay, look, here's the, for your group. We'll give you this question. Okay? You guys can have that one. Over here.
You go.
Split it up. Okay. You're going to have to split up here to make the men into two groups. Unless I think of another, I'll give you another topic. I'll think of another topic for you guys.